morning. We're continuing the introduction, and the goal is to finish it today. So we're on page 4 of the handout, and the Rambam says, this is in the Rambam's introduction to Perek Chelek, which is, Rambam wrote a Perek Mishnayos, a commentary on the Mishnah, and that's where in the introduction to the last parak of Sanhedrin. Actually, in the Mishnah, in Gemara, it's the last parak of Sanhedrin. In the Mishnah, it's the second to last parak of Sanhedrin. But in Rambam's introduction, that's where he presents his Yud Gimel Ikarim, the 13 articles of faith, and also talks about other things. One of them is the following. He says that when it comes to how people understand the words of the Chachamim, referring to Agadata, there are three types of people. He says, the first group of people I've met and I've seen their books, and these are people who take every word the Chachamim say literally. And they think they're honoring the Chachamim by taking every word literally. So again, go back to our frog the size of 60 houses. If Gemara says there's a frog the size of 60 houses, there must have been a frog the size of 60 houses because the Chachamim said so, and I believe. And the Rambam says that such people, they think they're honoring the Chachamim. They're not, because it's not reasonable to believe such a thing. And so you're attributing something ridiculous to the Chachamim, and that's not honoring them. That's dishonoring them. So that's the first group of people. And he says, Hakat hazo, the last sentence of the first paragraph, Hakat hazo mishamiskina rachmanut al sichotam, says these people, we pity their foolishness. You should feel sorry for such people. Okay? People who think they're honoring Chachamim by taking every word of Agadata literally.
Doesn't Rambam also it's my understanding, it seems to have this view even about things directly in the Chumash, that sort of rationalist view that with the Malachim going up and down the ladder, that it didn't actually happen. It was a vision.
That's not a good example, because that one the Torah explicitly says was a vision, but you're right. The Rambam holds that Avram Avinu never served dinner to three angels. It was all a dream. The Rambam holds Yaakov never fought with an angel. It was a dream. The Ramban attacks the Rambam very strongly for that opinion, and says, and one problem with the Rambam, clearly Sodom was destroyed. The angels came and destroyed Sodom. So where does the Rambam's dream or vision end, and where does the story start? Hard to know. In the case of Yaakov fighting with the angel, the Ramban says, then why was Yaakov limping? And Abarbanel answers, it's not Akasha. You could have a dream that is so realistic that you wake up limping. That could definitely happen. So, but yes, the Rambam does say that, but I'm not sure what the connection is here.
Well, it seems... I'm not saying, obviously, there are things that aren't literally true, but it seems that it fits in with his view even of the Torah, the quote rationalist view.
I'm not sure I see a connection, but all he's saying here, he's not saying that Noah got it, so should be taken literally. All he's saying is, if you take every word of Agadata literally as a literal fact, you are dishonoring the Chachamim. That seems like a simple enough statement. Okay. So the second group of people are people who take every word of Agadata literally, but not for the sake of honoring the Chachamim, but these are bad people who want to mock the Chachamim. And the way they mock the Chachamim is by saying, ha-ha, the Chachamim thought that earthquakes are caused by God's crying, okay? Or the Chachamim believed in frogs the size of 60 houses, ha ha ha. Okay? So those are they're both groups of people who take the Agadata literally, but with different motives. One thinks they're honoring the Chachamim and they're not, and the second are people whose intention is to mock the Chachamim. He says the third group, והקת השלישית, והם חי השם מעטים מאוד, עד שאפשר לקרוא להם קת, כמו שאפשר לומר על השמש מין, he says the third group, and I swear there are very few of these people, you can barely call them a group at all, and these are people who know the greatness of the Chachamim and the great understanding of the Chachamim, and that their words, the Chachamim, are telling us about very true things. And in other words, this is the people with the proper understanding. And the Rambam is of the opinion that there are very few of them. Hopefully, there will be more of them as we go along, including me. So that's how the Rambam says. Okay. So the Rambam's son, Rabbeinu Avram ben Arambam, wrote an essay, a booklet, whatever you want to call it, called Ma'amar al Odot Drashot Chazal, an essay about Drashos of Chazal, and that's source number 4 on page 4. And he says that the Drashos that we find in the Gemara fall into 5 categories. The first is Drashos that are meant to be taken at face value. There are certainly many of those. Second is drashos that have an outside and an inside. And the intention there, the Chachamim's intention, is on the inside, not on the outside. And he gives an example. For example, Amar Rabbi Gemara at the end of Tanis, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Atidak Hashpachu Lasot Machol Latzadikim Began Eden. In the future, Hashem will make a dance circle for the Chachamim, for the Tzadikim in Gan Eden. And Hashem's going to stand in the middle, and everyone's going to point and say, "Vamar v'yomahu, hinei Elokeinu zeh, this is our God, kivinu lo, we hoped for him, v'yoshienu, and he saved us, zeh Elokeinu, kivinu lo, nagila mischa b'shoato." So there's going to be all the tzaddikim dancing around Hashem and pointing at him and saying, "That's the one who saved us." Okay. Nice, beautiful story, beautiful image. But that's not what it means. Hashem is not physical, and Hashem cannot stand in the middle of a circle of people dancing, and people aren't going to dance around him and point to him. Okay. There's an inner meaning there. And one interpretation that's given is that, just as in a circle, everyone is equidistant from the center, and everyone has a different vantage point. So different tzaddikim will see Hashem differently, but to an equal degree. Okay. That's one possible interpretation, but it doesn't obviously mean they're going to be dancing around Hashem. The third one is Hachelak Hashlishi, Drashot She'en Lehem Minyan Pnimi. These are drashos that they don't have any hidden meaning, Ela Kavanat Umram Derech Shtam Bilvad, but what's meant is exactly what's said, except that, so how's it different than the first set? The first type, those are very simple statements. The third type are statements that are meant to be taken literally, except you need a lot of background information to understand them. Okay. And if you don't have the proper background information, you will misunderstand them. Okay. And so he gives an example. The Gemara says that a person should challenge his Yetzer Tov to go against his Yetzer Hara, okay? And that if that doesn't work, then he should read Kriya Shema, and if that doesn't work, he should think about the day of death. Okay? Take that at face value, but you're not really gonna understand what it means. You need to delve deeper into it. And he gives a longer explanation. And when we get to Masechet Brachos someday, we can talk about that. But in other words, it seems like a simple statement, but there's much more behind it that you have to know. If it's not a mashal like the second case about dancing around the Chachamim. Hachelik Hervi'i, the fourth type, Shomer Otob Firush Psukim Al Derech Machmadei Hashir. is an explanation that's sort of meant to be poetic. For example, the Gemara that says, Darshan's on the Pasuk, Aser te Aser, Aser bishvil shatit Asher. The Pasuk has a double language. In English, we just translated, you shall surely give Maser, you shall surely tithe. The Gemara Darshan's, give tithes so that you will become rich. Mm-hmm. That's not what the Pasuk means. Rabbi Yochanan didn't think that's what the Pasuk means. Mm-hmm. It was a poetic way of attaching a lesson to the Pasuk. And into this category also falls all the drashos that, at least according to some version, mm-hmm. all the times we say, Al tikre this, mm-hmm. ella that. Okay, Amar Rechananya, Amar Rabbi Lazar, by the way, the correct pronunciation there is Shlom, not Shalom. Rav Shlom Banayich. Al tikre banayich, ella bonayich. Don't read it your sons, read it your builders. It's just a poetic way of remembering a lesson that could be taken from the Pasuk. The Pasuk doesn't mean that. Now, there are other Mefarshim who explain how, in the case of a al tikre type of drasha, that the thing we're learning actually is hinted to in the, it's not a random, you know, changing the words, but there's actually a deeper connection between them. But some of Farshim learned, no, it's just, there was a nice lesson to be learned. They wanted to attach it to a pasuk so they would remember it. And this is how they attached it to the pasuk through these poetic means.
I said, many people say that it is literal, but not, it's not referring to materials.
That's certainly not the literal meaning of Pasuk. Okay. The Gemara says, give Maser so you'll get rich.
Who's rich? The one who satisfied
That's a drug. That's, now you're giving a drasha. That is not the, you're not giving shot in the puzzle. Right? The fifth type, he says, of drashos are drashos that are obviously exaggerations. For example, Gemara says from the word eitzel to the word eitzel, referring to two psukim that have the word eitzel in them. There are 400 camel loads of drushos. There are so many drushos to make on that set of psukim. If you would load them all up on camels, it would take 400 camels to carry them all. That's just an exaggeration. I would say that Rashbam in Bavasra says that when Gemara uses the number 300, it's usually an exaggeration. Okay. We find the number 400 also is used. There was an earthquake, and Eretz Yisrael moved 400 mil in this direction and 400 mil in that direction. A mil is roughly a kilometer, so it would be 250 miles in each direction. It's an exaggeration. It's a figure of speech. Okay. Those are the five types of drushos that the that Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam identifies. Ramchal, in his introduction to Agadata, he has a different breakdown in source number 5. Achad drachim asher elimu bem et divrahim shonim heim. The ways in which the Chachamim hid their words, they are different. Echad hu, one is derech hashalat mishalim, one is using mishalim. And the hashini, on the third line, hu derech helim, one is to hide. So the first one is parables. The second one is by hiding the conditions, the background information. And he says that this is done in halacha also. In other words, for example, we'll find a Mishnah. A Mishnah will say what seems to be an absolute halacha, and the Gemara will say, hacha b'mayaskinon, what are we talking about in this specific case? And the same thing with Agadata. The Gemara might make a statement, seems like a general statement, but unless you actually delve into it and have the keys that the Ramchal referred to before, okay, that you're not going to know that this statement is meant to be limited to a very specific situation or to be talking about a certain background information that you need to understand it. And if you know the proper limits of something, then you will be able to understand it. We'll see something a similar concept from Maharal a little later this morning. Okay. Page 5, back to Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam, source number 6. He says, so first he told us there are 5 kinds of drushos. Now he will tell us there are 4 kinds of stories in the Agadata. And some of them have, the first one has 4 subsets. So the first one is, Achelak HaRishon, Masiyot Shayuv Yir'u Bolam, Kefi Mashe Timsautam Tuvim. These are stories that actually happened the way they are written. U'tzruchu Laviyam Mehem Toilet. And they're brought for a reason. Okay? And the reason might be, HaDerech HaRishon, Hu HaMaaseh Shetomod Mehem Toilet B'dinim. There could be stories that you might learn halachos from. HaDerech HaShini, Hu Maaseh. Now, we said the other day that we don't learn halachos from agadatas, from stories, but the Maariv Chayos, the long discussion about whether some Rishonim might disagree with that, or whether there are only specific types of stories we don't learn lessons from. The somebody who listened to the Shira online called me yesterday and said, when I was in college, I took a Jewish history class, and the professor said every society has a flood myth, right? And I said, doesn't that prove it's true? And she didn't like that. I was in her doghouse the rest of the semester. But similarly, so if the same Maariv Chayos said there's no story that appears the same way in the Yerushalmi as it does in the Bible, Rabbi Maariv Chayos said not a single story appears the same way in both places, but the conclusions are the same. So the person who called me said, well, doesn't that prove it's a legitimate conclusion? And the answer is yes, but you can't learn halachos from the details of the stories because we don't know if the details of the stories are correct, and the calls, so it calls the whole story into question. The Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam, though, is saying there are at least some stories that we could learn halachos from. Aderech HaShini, the second one is, Humaseh Shinilmad Toelet Midot V'deot. There are stories from which we learn good midos, or bad midos. There are stories that teach us bad midos that we should not follow. Aderech HaShlishi, the third one is, Humaseh Shinilmad Menu Ikar Mikarei Emunah, that teaches us principles of faith. For example, the story of Choni HaMa'agel, who stood in a circle and davened for rain, and before he started davening, he told people, take your ovens indoors because they're going to melt when it rains. This teaches us to believe in the power of a tzaddik's tefillah. It's not one of the 13 articles of faith, but it is a matter of faith to believe that. The fourth one is Masiyot Shnichtavu Mipnei She'ira Bahem Dvar Pela V'Inyan Tema, stories that just involve something wondrous that we want to record about the Chachamim, and he gives an example here that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi came to an inn, and Rabbi Meir asked the innkeeper, what's your name? And the innkeeper said, Kidur. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi gave their wallets to the innkeeper to watch, and Rabbi Meir didn't. And the innkeeper didn't return Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi's wallets. And Rabbi Meir interpreted from the innkeeper's name that he was a dishonest person and therefore didn't give him his wallet. Shows you the brilliance of, or the intuition, or the Ruach HaKodesh. So it shows you something about Rabbi Meir. It's a nice story to know, just because it's an amazing story. So that's the fourth category in the first part. Okay. So the first part, again, is stories that actually happened, the way they're recorded, and they teach us something, okay? Whether it's halacha or midos or emuna or just something amazing. The second category is hamasot shenir'u v'yir'u b'hem b'chalom, stories that they were observed, but they were in a dream. They weren't actual stories that happened. And he puts in this category the story that appears in Masechet Brachos of Rabbi Shmuel, who says that he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to do the Avoda, and Hashem appeared to him and asked for a bracha. And we learn from this that you should seek the brachos of people less than you. You know, Hashem asked Rabbi Shmuel for a bracha. Okay. Rabbeinu Avraham and Rambam learns that never happened. That was a dream. Okay. And in fact, the Rabbi Shmuel who we know lived after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Well, there is in Asara Rugi Malchus, there is a Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. So it could have been the very end of the first base, as the second Beis Hamikdash rather. So I take that back. But in any event, he's learning that never happened. That was a dream. The third, Hachelak HaShlishi, Masiyot Shir'u Ba'olam Kmo Shenichtavu, stories that did happen, but they are exaggerated. The way they're told, they're exaggerated because the Chachamim didn't think anyone would possibly take them literally, and therefore they exaggerated. And it gives us an example of this, the story of Rabba and Rabbi Zera, who had the Purim Suda together, and they got drunk, and Rabba killed Rabbi Zera, and then davened for him to come back to life. And the next year, Rabba invited Rabbi Zera for the Purim Suda again, and Rabbi Zera said, "No thanks, miracles don't happen every year." That's the story in the Gemara. Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam's learning, it's an exaggeration, he didn't kill him. Means he knocked him out. He hurt him badly. Okay. And nobody would possibly think that he killed him. So that's how he understands the story. There are other, obviously, interpretations of the story. I saw this past Purim. I think I saw in the Sefer. Lubavitcher Rebbe, the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, he explained that this story is that he says, obviously he didn't kill him, okay, but this, what it means is that he taught him. Rabbi Zera at that point had not learned Kabbalah, and in their drunken state, Rabba was elevated to a very high level. You see that some people in our community, they get drunk, they're when a person gets drunk, all it does is remove his inhibitions. So if he's inherently a righteous person, but he hides it because he is humble, then when he gets drunk, then he's not going to be able to hide it. You're going to see. And there are some people in our community who I think fall into that category. There are other people who they're inherently coarse people, and when they get drunk, they're not going to be able to hide that. And so Rabbi Zera, Rabba, when he got drunk, he could not restrain himself from telling Rabbi Zera all kinds of Kabbalistic secrets. And Rabbi Zera's soul left him, and Rabba was able to bring him because in spiritual ecstasy, his soul left him, and Rabba was able to bring him back. And the next year, Rabba thought, well, maybe it's a year later. Rabbi Zera's on a higher level; I can invite him again. And Rabbi Zera said, "I'm not taking any chances." So that's how the Lubavitcher Rebbe learned that story. But in any event, the Rabbeinu Avraham ben Rambam learns that story. You know, that doesn't mean that he killed him. He didn't die. And the truth is, even in Tanakh, where Eliyahu HaNavi resuscitated the dead child, there are some Mefarshim who learn that he wasn't dead. He was unconscious, which would answer a question. Eliyahu HaNavi, according to some, was a Kohen. How could he come in contact with a dead child? Other Rishonim say that's absolute amaratzus. The Pasuk says he was dead. He was dead. And how did either Eliyahu Navi wasn't a Kohen, or it was a case of pikuach nefesh. Eliyahu HaNavi knew he would be able to resuscitate the dead, to revive the dead child, so he was allowed to. Okay, so there's a whole discussion about that. And the fourth category are stories that are used as mishalim. Okay, and he puts into this category the story about in Masechet Sukkah that Shlomo Melech had two servants, and the Malach HaMavis, and Shlomo Melech saw that the Malach HaMavis was sad, and he and Shlomo Melech said, "Why are you sad?" He said, "I'm supposed to kill these two servants, and I take these two servants of yours, and I can't." And Shlomo Melech saw that they were at risk, so he sent them to a town where nobody ever died. But just as they got to the gate of that town, they died. And then the Malach HaMavis came back and said, "Fooled you. They were supposed to die at the gate of that town." So Rabbeinu Avraham ben Rambam says that this is a mashal to teach us that you can't fool God. You can't fool the Malach HaMavis. Everything is going to work out in the end the way Hashem wants. And sometimes when you think you're outsmarting Hashem, you're actually playing into exactly what Hashem wants. And the classic example of this is not from Rabbeinu Rambam. I believe Ramchal, if I recall correctly, mentions this repeatedly. I don't remember if it's Ramchal in Derech Hashem or Chaim Friedlander in his commentary on Derech Hashem, but constantly the story of Yosef and his brothers. They thought they were accomplishing one thing, and in fact, they were doing exactly the opposite of what they thought they were doing. They thought they were getting rid of Yosef, and in fact, they were making Yosef's dreams come true. Right? You can't outsmart Hashem. Everything's going to work out exactly the way Hashem wants. Okay. Let's skip to number 9 for now. Number 7 and 8 deal with medical cures found in Agadata. We'll come back to that later or another time. Let's move on to number 9. This is from the Ramchal again, and he says, briefly, 7 and 8 are viewpoints of the Rabbeinu Avraham, the son of the Rambam, and Rav Hirsch, who both say that the Chachamim weren't doctors, so there could be the medical cures in the Gemara, they don't work because the Chachamim weren't doctors, so don't. Don't be bothered by that. It's not a lack of emunah to say that. Most or many other Rishonim learn that the reason the medical cures in Gemara don't work is because either we don't really know what the herbs referred to are, or because nature has changed. Those are other reasons. It is usur al pi halacha. There's a chirim against trying to use any of the cures in the Gemara, because they don't work. Because they don't work for us, I should say. They don't work for us, but the reason, we don't know. So there is the viewpoint of Rabbeinu Avraham ben Rambam and Rav Hirsch that they don't work because the Chachamim were not doctors, and they passed on information that might not have been correct, or might not have been completely correct. Okay. The Ramchal says that the proper way to understand information about nature, which seemingly would include medical cures, is that the Chachamim had a point they wanted to teach us. It is perfectly understandable that they would phrase their lesson in terms that people would understand in those days. Okay? If the facts turn out to be wrong, that doesn't take away from the lesson. They used a mashal about, so they I'm trying to think of a good example. He doesn't give a specific example, but they used mashalim about parables about science as it was believed in those days. Okay? Whether the parable 2,000 years later is a good parable or not doesn't take away from the fact that the lesson is a good lesson. And that could be and so anything they the Chachamim say about nature, about astronomy, to teach us some lesson, that's how we should, the Ramchal says, that's how we should understand it. Okay. I had a Rebbe once who said something similar about Pasuk says that Hashem is going to bring us back on the wings of eagles. Okay. Do we really think that we're all going to get on the wings of eagles and fly to Eretz Yisrael? No. The Pasuk meant airplanes. But if the Navi had told people, or if Hashem had told the Navi, you can get on airplanes, they would have said, Vos is an airplane. Right? So Hashem used an image that they could relate to teach a lesson that we're all going to come back in very quickly. Okay? Not like in the olden days when you had to walk or take a rickety old boat, but very quickly we're all going to be in Eretz Yisrael as if we were flying on the wings of eagles. That's one, I don't know if my Rebbe said that had a source for it or was his interpretation, but seems like a reasonable, interpretation of the pasuk. The Rambam, in fact, writes in the introduction to Pirkei Avos, Rambam is explaining what imagination is. He says, imagination is the part of your mind that sees things that could never exist, such as a metal ship flying through the air. Okay? So some people want to say, you see how brilliant the Rambam is. He imagined a metal ship flying through the air, even though he said, but he says it's impossible, right? So certainly the common person in the time of the Navi Shia would have not been able to imagine a metal ship flying through the air. And would have, so therefore, they were told about the wings of eagles. Okay. So that's similar to the Ramchal's approach. Maral has another approach, sources 10 and 11. Maral wrote a sefer called Be'er HaGola, which is essentially the entire sefer is an introduction to Agadata, and it was mentioned 2 days ago, I think. Sefer Ma'ore Naim of Rav Azaria D'Rasio, and the Be'er HaGola was in large part written in response to that because of certain attitudes that Rav Azaria D'Rasio had towards Agadata. So source number 10, the Maral says, Hatzuna Chamishit, the fifth complaint that people have about Agadata is that v'mashem alinim al ezem amarim shenim suvidi frechamim, that people complain about certain statements of Chazal. Shniralefi marita ayin shem terim she'en v'ayim mamash klal. They seem to have no substance. They seem to make no sense at all. V'davar zeh yirbu atlan ma'od lidrosh pagadot shel dofi. And this leads people to give, to mock the Agadata or to give incorrect interpretations. Okay. So we will remove this complaint from people, and we'll let you know. They should have paid attention. There are things that seem to be far from our understanding. They are written in a concealed way in their place, but if you look somewhere else, you'll find the meaning. We have an expression, Divrei Torah, aniyim b'makom echad v'ashirim b'makom acher. Divrei Torah are poor in one place and rich in another place. You just have to look. And in particular, okay, he says, look in Medrash, Medrash Sefer HaZohar, look in the Zohar, which he calls a Medrash, which is, the Zohar is in the category of Medrash. It's just a very difficult Medrash to understand. Medrash Avahir L'Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akaneh, also another Kabbalistic Medrash. U'Shar Sifrei Chochmah, other Sfarim of Wisdom. In other words, if you don't understand the Agadata and it seems mysterious and doesn't make any sense to you, maybe it's a Kabbalistic secret. So that's one possible interpretation, and that could be applied as well to statements about science, statements about medicine. Maybe they're telling us something deeper hidden in these lessons seemingly about science. And as we'll see in a second, the Maharal holds that Chachamim had better things to do than think about science, so they wouldn't have been telling us science anyway. Okay, that's source number 11, Hatluna Shishit, the sixth complaint that people have. They say that the Chachamim didn't have basic human knowledge, such as basic scientific knowledge. And the reality is, Shaloya Ne'elam Mihem, Rak Dibru Bahem V'Tachlit HaZarut. I'm sorry, this is part of the complaint. This is also the Maral. This is the same, section 5 of the Be'er HaGola. That was the introduction to section 5, and this is the introduction to section 6 of Be'er HaGola. He says that people think the Chachamim didn't know science, and if they did know, they talked about it in a very strange way. Okay? So he says, that's not right. Okay? And Radavar Zehefech Mashi Yisirol HaChachamim can't be true, because it's the opposite of what the Chachamim said. Emor L'Chochma Chotiyad. Pasuk says in Mishlei, tell wisdom you are my sister. And the Gemara Masechet Shabbos says, if something is as clear to you as the halacha that your sister is prohibited to you, then you should say it. And if it's not that clear to you, don't say it. So how could you accuse the Chachamim of talking about things they didn't understand? When Chachamim say, if you don't understand it absolutely through and through, don't say it. Okay? So it can't possibly be correct. Rather, he says, top of page 6, Gvarni Berlecha, Kikol Shavim, the Varzel Achshova Chachamim Kach, Zomashim, Matsu, Divram, Shan, Usibo, the Dream Tibim, Tibim Bolam. Why do people think that about the Chachamim? It's because Chachamim seem to give reasons for natural phenomenon. For example, the example we mentioned was, and this example he talks about here, is that eclipses of the sun are caused by four averos. The Maral says, that can't be true. I mean, on a physical level, because the Maral lived in the 1500s, and he says, you can calculate when there'll be eclipses of the sun. You can calculate it precisely. Okay. Maral already knew that. Okay. And surely the Chachamim knew that it was a natural phenomenon. In this week's Parsha, it says that rainbows occur to remind God not to bring a flood. We all know, Chacham knew, rainbows occur because the sun refracts through the humidity in the air in a certain way and breaks into different colors. Okay? So Maral says that on the third line, end of the third line, well, Ein ha'emet kach klal, ki lo bau Chachamim ledaber min ha'siva ativit. Chachamim never intended to give natural explanations for things. Ki katanu pachot tasiva tivit. That's not significant. Ki davar zeyut l'chachmei ateva o l'rofim. That's something that's for scientists or doctors to worry about. Lo l'chachamim. Not for the chachamim. They have better things to do than worry about that. Aval heim zal dibru min ha'siva shmecheyev ateva. Chazal were explaining why is nature the way it is. Why did Hashem create a situation where the moon could go in front of the sun and conceal it? It's because of four specific averos. Now, and then he goes and explains at length why it's midah keneged midah for those four averos to result in an eclipse of the sun. Now, that does raise a question, okay, which is the famous question of So he says, does that take away our free will? From Maharal himself. So doesn't that take away our free will? Because Hashem created eclipses of the sun. Eclipses of the sun happen because of averos. So that means we're going to do those averos. The Maharal says that you have to distinguish between the person's free will and the plan of the world in general. Since the sin of Adam Arishon, man is going to sin. Doesn't mean I have to do those sins. Doesn't mean you have to do those sins. Those sins will occur. And sins will occur. It doesn't take away an individual's free choice. So it's built into nature, and the same thing the Maharal says regarding the rainbow, that the Torah is explaining not how a rainbow occurs, but why a rainbow occurs. And that's the Gemara was not the least bit interested in explaining a scientific phenomenon. So anytime it looks like they're saying something that's non-scientific, you should know that that's the reason. So you had we've had several explanations. Either it's a mashal for something, either it's a Kabbalistic secret, or you just have to look behind the science and understand that the Chachamim are explaining not how, but why. Okay. The last source, number 13, is back to the Ramchal, the author of Masil Sharim and Derech Hashem and many others for him. And he says that not everything should be taken at face value. There are rules about how to understand Agarata. Okay? And if a person would darshan a pasuk, for example, in a way that doesn't follow one of those rules, that he could come out with a conclusion which is totally incorrect. And therefore, you have to know the rules of Agarata. When one of them, for example, is, okay, he gives an example from Medrash Rabbah, where Rabbi Meir interpreted a pasuk in Shir Shirim, Ad Shamelech b'Mesibo Yirdi Natan Richo, that while the king was still in his party, there was a bad smell. And he says, while Bnei Yisrael were, while Hashem was still at Har Sinai, Bnei Yisrael made the egel and ruined the whole occasion. And Rabbi Meir was told, now obviously it's true, they made the egel and they ruined the whole occasion. We know that. But Rabbi Meir was told, you cannot interpret Shir Shirim that way. We have a rule, Shir Shirim can only be interpreted favorably. There's nothing bad in Shir Shirim. That's a rule of drushos. Okay. Another rule of drushos is, anytime you can say something nice about a tzaddik, say it. Anytime you can say something bad about a rasha, say it. So, for example, Chazal say that Bilam lived with his donkey. Where in the world is that hinted to? The answer is, if you could find a pasuk that would even remotely hint that Bilam lived with his donkey, say it, because whatever, anything bad you can say about a rasha, you should say. Anything good you can say about a tzaddik, you should say. And into this category fall drushos such as Lavan was Bilam. Bilam was Lavan. Ezra was the Navi Malachi. It doesn't mean necessarily that Bilam was the same person as Lavan. It doesn't mean that Ezra was the same person as Malachi. It means whatever bad midos Lavan had, Bilam had them too. Whatever good midos Malachi had, Ezra had them too. Okay. It's an extension of not only anything good you can find about a tzaddik, but if you have even a hint to connect to tzaddikim or to connect to Rishayim to say that they are one and the same, meaning they have the same good midos or the same bad midos, you should do it. So those are also rules of drushos. Yiras Hashem, the next session we will actually start learning Parashat Shelach. I will bring Svarim. So.